What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in as always. First things first, my only thing that I push at the beginning of the show is to let you know if you are tuning in for the first time, you can fast forward till you hear the beat, and that is where you're going to hear my interview with Wicca Faith Springs Eternal. But if you are a weekly listener, you already know the drill. You haven't done it yet, or else you would have already skipped past this, or maybe you are skipping past this. But if you have not gone to patreon.com/kindaneat and pledged $1 per episode, then you should. You should just be a good person and go, you know what? My mans and them, Lee and Ben, on the board making the shit sound buttery. Every week they're pumping out the jams for us on YouTube, and they're pumping out the contemplative conversations on the podcast app for me, and it makes my life better. So what I'm going to do is buy them one cafe latte a month by pledging $1 per episode at patreon.com/kindaneat. This is the week to take action. This is the week to make a change. This is the week to make a difference and support the podcast. Thank you guys so much for all the support as of late. The last few episodes have been going real hard. Goddamn, the Wi-Fi's funeral episode, I tweeted the video out and it got 1,000 retweets and almost 2,000 likes on Twitter. That is the biggest tweet that Kinda Neat, or actually even my Intuition, that's the biggest tweet I've ever made. So shout out to Wi-Fi's funerals following, because you guys are out there and you are an army, and shout out to Wi-Fi's funeral. That was a fucking huge tweet, really dope. So this week on the show we have something pretty new for you guys. He's out of a crew called Goth Boy Click. His name is Wicca Faith Springs Eternal, and he used to be in a band called Tiger's Jaw, and now he has started this new solo project, Wicca Faith, that is kind of the way Ben worded it is pretty fucking accurate. Ben goes, man, it's like the bands I used to listen to in middle school over 2016 beats, which is very accurate representation. It's kind of like this emo, gothic, punk-tinged vocal over what could be labeled as like dark, dense, 2016 trap beats. And it makes for a very interesting blend. And there's a few people making this kind of music. In his click alone, there's Little Tracy, Horsehead, Lil Peep, and him, Wicca Faith. Shout out Nedarb. But he was one of the first ones that I got put onto, actually. Just because I started hearing his songs on various mixes that friends on the internet would be making. And I was drawn to it as like, this is very weird, but I like it. He did a song with Bones that I had heard that I really enjoyed. And then he ended up on Spooky Black's second album, which I really enjoyed as well. And it was a really cool conversation because he's lived a lot of music life and has – this is kind of his pivot. Like, he's already had his success in the rock world and – toured off of that and made a living, and then he pivoted over to this and is kind of like making it his new thing, and it works for me. I really like it. What I want to tell you guys before we get into the conversation, like I said, you can fast forward to the beat if you don't want to hear me bullshit about myself. That's when the conversation starts. Last weekend or the weekend before, I can't remember which, I was sitting around the house with my girl and we were like, let's do something. And I've been wanting to like go to a Korean spa for a while, because as you guys know, I met Ben when I was working at Knock City, and that was like, I was the only white dude. It was all Korean dudes and me. Well, Zoe is like Filipino, but whatever. He was still of Asian descent. Point being is I was the only white dude, and they would talk about Korean spas and it sounded dope. And I've heard from other friends that Korean spas are dope. And I was like, you know what? It's Sunday. We're just kicking it. Like, it's nice out. Why don't we go blow some time at a Korean spa? So we started doing our research and looking around, and we saw this one. It's called Wee Spa in LA, and it sounded like it's like a giant. It's like the Costco of Korean spas, but it sounded like it was probably going to be too busy because it was a Sunday, and there's probably going to be little kids running around and shit because there's a big common area. And so we found one that was similar to Wee Spa, but a little smaller. And I forget exactly what it is called, but I don't want to shout it out anyway just because of where this story ends up going. So we get to this Korean spa and we're thinking like, okay, we'll just have like nice little time, chilling in saunas and stuff. And then what happens with Korean spas is you go in and there are you pick out the services that you want. And then if you're with a girl, then you guys split up because she goes into the women's section and you go into the men's section. And in those respective spa sections, there are various saunas, hot tubs, outdoor areas, et cetera, et cetera. And then they also give you a uniform of like a t-shirt and baggy shorts, like cargo shorts. You kind of look like you would be hacky sacking at a jam band festival in Vermont when you put on the Korean spa uniforms. But what you can do is after you're done down there, if you want to meet up with your significant other or members of the opposite sex that you happen to be with, you put on your uniform and you can just meet them upstairs, because upstairs is like a co-ed area where there are various saunas of different temperatures, and they're all very mild because this is a place where there's like tons of like old people and families and kids sitting around. So none of the spas are like super hot spas, but they all, like, there's a clay room, there's a gold room, there's a jade room, there's the big open commons area has a heated floor with pads on it, so you can, there's like sleeping rooms, so you just sit up there and chill and you can nap, or you can get food at a little restaurant there and stuff like that, and you just chill. So our plan was, let's go in, pick a service, because then you get in for you get the entrance fee waived, because you can spend the whole day there for $25. You can spend like 12 hours there for $25 if you want. But so what we decided to do was each get a massage. So we each got like a shiatsu massage. I don't generally like getting massaged. I've only gotten two professional massages before in my life, and I haven't bought either one. It's not something that I generally seek out. But today I decided to, you know, treat myself. And so I got her a massage and me a massage, the same one. And then we got to kicking it, you know? So I was like, all right, here's what we'll do. We'll spend a half hour back here, and then I'll meet you out front, and we'll go up to the Jim Jabong and chill. So I went back, and what it is very, it's a very naked thing. You're super naked. You go back there and you change and you just have a towel pretty much. And so I have a towel and I go out, and there's an open shower area, because if you want to go into any of the hot tubs or the saunas, you have to shower first. And if you go into a sauna, you have to shower before you go in a tub after that too. So there's a lot of showering. So I go back there to the locker room, take off my clothes, wrap myself in a towel, walk out to the front. To the big spa area. When you go in, it's like this big open area, and they have a giant tub up on a platform that could probably, like, it's a jacuzzi that could probably fit, oh fuck, I don't know, like 40 people in it probably. It's giant. And then next to that, they have a hotter tub. So the jacuzzi is like a standard warm temperature, and then next to that is a tub that's like only, could probably only fit 4 people, and it's like really fucking hot water. I don't know how hot, but very hot. Like, you want to hold your balls as you're getting in because you feel like you're going to burn them off. And then on the other side of that jacuzzi, there is a cold pool. So I was like going into the hot pool, hot tub, the super hot tub, and then into the cold pool and doing that back and forth for a little bit. And at this point, it's like noon, you know, when we get there, and it's pretty empty, but it's like standard. It's like the people that you would expect to be at a Korean spa. It's like a lot of older Korean guys and a few like exploratory, I don't even know if that's a word, I say it all the time though, but exploratory white dudes like trying to soak in other cultures because of the lack of their culture, of their own personal culture, appropriators, if you will. So I was there as one of those guys, and there's just generally a few other old Korean dudes. And so I hop in some saunas. There's one with like a aloe vera sauna or something like that, and there's a steam room that you can't even see in, and it's whatever. I go shower and I hop in the tubs, and then I fucking hop in the saunas and shower again, and my half hour's up very quickly, and nothing strange has happened to this point. And I see the time and I go, okay, I'm gonna go meet my girl out there. And so I go put on my uniform and we go up to the Jim Jabong and chill. And at this point It's like getting close to 1-ish or something. So we grab some lunch and just hang out, you know? And then at 2 o'clock is our massages. And I'm not really knowing what to expect at this point as far as the massage goes, but I'm thinking that it was I thought that maybe there would be like an upstairs or something, or like a private room or something. But I had seen when I was taking a shower in the downstairs part that there's like just a sheet that says like, do not enter until your appointment time or without appointment or something. I'm going, oh, I hope that's not the massage room, because it looked kind of like, I don't know, it looked a little not... It just looked gross, I guess. I don't know the word that I'm thinking of, but it didn't look as luxurious as I was hoping, I guess. I go back down there around the time that it's about to be massage time, and right at 2 o'clock they start calling 93. I was number 93. 93. I'm like, oh yeah, that's me. And he's like, okay, follow me. It's this little tiny Korean dude. Like, I'm talking like probably 5'4". I say, do I need to shower or anything? He just goes, ugh. It like doesn't answer me. At this point, I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know if he like speaks that much English or if he just didn't want to answer me or whatever. But he takes me back beyond that curtain that I thought looked a little suspect. And there's two other dudes on fucking massage beds, like butt ass naked. One of them's face up, so like dingus all out and everything. The other one's face down. And there's two other Korean dudes in there rubbing them down, like going to fucking town, rubbing these guys, massaging, but like fucking hard. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm about to get manhandled, you know? And so he's like, okay, drop trowel, like lay on the table. I lay on the table and he's just like, starts massaging me. I've never gotten a massage from a man. I don't have any problem with that. It's like not it's not something where I was like, ew, gross, a guy touching me. Like, I don't give a shit. It's whatever. So this guy is, he's beating me up, dude. Like, it's a shiatsu massage and he is fucking, it is so intense that most of the time my face is like fully grimaced, like, ugh, like I'm groaning sometimes and he's going, is that okay? I'm like, yeah, yeah. But I mean, he's like fucking grinding his thumbs into me. Pause. But like, not, I'm just saying like into my knots and stuff. It was insane and it was painful. I don't know. I still don't know if I enjoy massages. And I'm sure that, my girl's was like equally as rough and a woman did that to her. And I couldn't believe that the dude's hands were strong enough to like hurt my shoulders as much as he hurt them. And then eventually, yeah, I had to fucking roll over and they put like a towel and cucumbers and all this shit on your face and he's rubbing you that way and your dick's all hanging out in the air. And It's an experience that I kind of don't know if I'd want to experience again, but I'm glad that I experienced it one time, And then at the end, you roll over again and you just got oil all over yourself at this point. And he like grabs a fucking bucket of hot water and just dumps it on top of you to like start rinsing off. And then that's it. And it's an hour and I can't tell if it felt like a short amount of time or if it felt like a goddamn eternity, but it was different. It was different. It was memorable in that, like, I don't think I enjoyed it just because, like, it made me feel more sore by the time I stood up. But at that point, it's 3 o'clock because it started at 2 and it was an hour, so it's 3 o'clock. And when I go back out to the main men's spa area, it is noticeably different at this point. There are a lot more dudes back there because now it's the middle of the day. And so I go to shower off. And at this point, I'm starting to notice that there are there are some people maybe looking at me more than they should be, I guess. And I'm going, oh, okay, yeah, this is a place where like people are congregating to try and get laid. And I didn't know that it was going to be like that, but that's what I'm like starting to kind of realize. I had heard tales of this, but I was like, oh, these are just dudes that are like, they're like homophobes or something. And that's why they're saying this. But then at this point at 3 o'clock, I'm noticing there are a lot of like younger dudes there and like, super fit guys. And there are guys like, trying to scoot closer to people than they should in the sauna, or like walking around a little too open, like a little too comfortable with their dicks out. And it all culminates with the fact that I'm outside at one point, because there's an outside area with like really tall walls where you can kind of go outside and just chill in the open air. And at this point, it's a very small porch, and there were so many dudes out there. I didn't realize it, but I didn't want to like walk out and just turn right back around. So I go sit down for a little bit, and I have my towel on or whatever. And most everybody has their towels on until this fucking guy comes out. He comes out and sits and like pulls his towel off and is just sitting, just spread legs in a chair, dick hanging out. And he has a fucking cock ring on. He has a silver cock ring like over his dick. And he starts like, he puts his hand on his dick and starts like waving it around like a helicopter or something, trying to see if anybody was gonna like bite onto the bait or something. Like he was fishing for a fucking handy or something. And I was fucking mortified, to be honest, because I just didn't understand what I had walked into. And oh man. So, you know, at that point, my girl and I had decided, okay, after our massage, like take 20 minutes or whatever to kind of like unwind, and then we'll meet outside again and get ready to dip. And so, yeah. So as soon as I saw the guy trying to fish by wrangling his reel around, with the cock ring on, I was like, all right, I am done back here. This vibe has changed. And so I put on the uniform and went out and met her and was like, all right, like the massage was crazy and I'm in a lot of pain. And I think that I've had my fill of the Korean spa, because the vibe in the main spa section has definitively changed. And I think it is like going to break out into a full on orgy soon. And I don't know if I want to partake in that. Oh, the other thing that I forgot to mention is like outside of the main spa area, when you leave the locker rooms, if you were to go left instead of right, there are some other saunas that are like out of the beaten path that I didn't realize. And one of them is like very dimly lit clay sauna. And I walked in there thinking it was empty, but there was just like two dudes in there sitting very close to each other. And then there was another one and when I opened, the door, like there was another one that was like really brightly lit. And when I opened that door, like, it was like a record scratch or something, and all of the dudes that were in there like looked at me, and I was like, whoa, strange vibes here. And so, yeah, that's my Korean spa experience. So I went and showered one last time and threw on the uniform and met my girl up in the Jim Jobong, and we chilled for a little bit. And I was like recalling my experiences to her, and she's like cracking up about that. And so I was like, all right, so that's that. We went and got dressed and went home. But it was not what I expected. It was not what I expected. I don't know if they're all like that. I've heard that some are like pretty, are like more, really family friendly. So I would hope that the family friendly ones is not quite like that. But it was different. It was different. I only wanted to go to a Korean spa because I went to the Wynn in Las Vegas for a photo shoot. We stayed at the Wynn for a week, and they had the people putting us up had paid for like spa access for us. And I kicked it in a spa there at the Wynn for like 4 hours. And it was like the best fucking 4 hours of my life, man. If you ever get to go to the spa at the Wynn, go fucking treat yourself. That shit is luxurious and amazing. Telling that story, it's very suspect, and I don't know if I want it out there in the world, but I'm going to leave it there because it was funny. It's funny in hindsight, and you know, shout out to the guy with the cock ring. You know, do the damn thing. I hope you're out there every weekend getting yours. Anyhow, yeah, that's that. Sorry if you're just tuning in as a first time listener to hear Wicca Face Springs Eternal's like first audio interview. That's what I do on the intros of these shows. And without any further ado, let's get into that conversation with Wicca Faze. Here is my interview with him on Kinda Neat. Is this your first trip to LA?
Or no, this is like... I was out here like 2 weeks ago, and then
that's right. That's when I first talked to you, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. And I was out here a little bit earlier this year, and then when else was I here? I was here like last September. That was the first time I came out. I was out here with the Tiger Shell once, but I don't even think that was like LA proper.
What was it, like the Valley or something? I think Santa Ana?
Yeah, I think so. We did like a there was like a festival, a hardcore festival.
Oh, right.
Sound and Fury.
Uh-huh.
And it got like shut down, so we played someone's backyard like right before we were about to play.
It got shut down?
Yeah, someone rode their motorcycle into the venue, and then cops like put through tear gas and
Jesus. And that was supposed to be like your first LA show?
Yeah.
Oh, what a
We were on stage setting up. It was a 2-stage festival.
That's fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
That sucks. You were out here from your hometown of Scranton, right?
Yeah, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Scranton, PA. Shout out to The Office. I'm sure you hear that every time you bring up Scranton,
PA. Yeah, I love The Office, though.
Yeah, great show. Where is Scranton near?
It's northeast Pennsylvania, so it's 2 hours from Philadelphia, like 2 hours north of Philadelphia, 2 hours west of New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you know Easton, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
That's where my mom is from.
Really?
That's like my – that's my, I grew up in Alaska.
That's pretty
right?
close. Oh, did he?
Yeah, I grew up in Alaska, but my whole family's from Easton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends from Easton.
Yeah, and then my dad's from the west side of Pennsylvania, right near Latrobe, which is why I have a Rolling Rock tattoo.
There you go.
Feel me?
That's right.
Yeah. So Scranton, what's Scranton like?
Scranton is Scranton's weird. Like when I was in high school, Scranton's scene was awesome. Like as far as music went, as far as bands went, there was a lot of older, like, you know, people who were like 10 years older than us when I was in high school playing in bands, like indie bands and stuff that, I mean, they were playing a lot, so that was cool. And then I feel like me and all of my friends were in bands that, were, you know, went on to like do stuff like out of the city, you know, like, I mean, I was in Tiger Shell, we signed to Run for Cover Records. There's a band called the Menzingers. They're like a year older than me. They're on Epitaph Records right now.
Sick.
Like it's like all my friends were in popular bands and stuff, and their bands are still popular, but now I don't think that's really happening.
Right.
I still live there because it's pretty cheap,
right,
and I have a job, like a day job and stuff, like a career.
How's your day job? Oh, it's like a career, not a job.
It's kind of like a career.
Is that good?
Yeah, I think I like it.
Yeah,
I do marketing.
Oh, cool. So that's kind of an art form in and of itself. You get to be creative with marketing.
Yeah, you do. And I like doing analytical stuff too. Like I work in like Google reporting and stuff like
right.
that, keyword research and stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's like a different, I don't know, it allows you to not be creative sometimes and just,
right,
you know, drill down and do work.
Totally.
And I like that.
Nice.
But yeah, so I'm still there, but
well, what do you think, like sociologically, what led to so many bands coming from there? Like, why was it an epicenter of that?
I don't know. I maybe just because we had so many positive like role models. Like, I mean, really, there was a lot of bands that like cool indie bands that that stayed local for a long time.
Yeah,
and we were around to witness that, you know, and they were able to take us under their wing and
right, and they're kind of like, oh hey, we didn't make it this far, but here's how you guys could make it this far.
Yeah like that. I mean, our first tour, I was in like, man, I was like 17 when I did my first Tiger Shaw tour.
Uh-huh.
And we went with just like a local Scranton like indie band, and like,
shout them out.
Yeah, the Green Chair.
Shout out Green Chair.
Yeah, I was in the Green Chair too.
Oh, sick.
That's probably why we went on that tour, because okay, I was in that band too. They were older than us, and like they ran, the singer ran a local label called Prison Jazz Records.
Uh-huh.
And like that's all I wanted. I just wanted to be signed to that label. And so we did this tour. Like no one came to any of the shows. They weren't big cities or anything like that.
Right.
But like we had that, and someone did that for us, you
yeah.
know. And we needed that. And I think a lot of people in Scranton had that experience too, where they were able to, you know, be taken under the wing of people, and it worked out, you know. And they
yeah.
saw their band through. It's really weird.
What is like Scranton like? Is it old city USA? Like is it a defunct industry town at this point?
Yeah, it was a coal town.
It was a coal town.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anthracite city.
Okay.
And yeah, I guess, I mean, so I don't know. I couldn't tell you anything about industry there
right,
or anything
right.
now. You know, I have no idea.
Right.
It's really weird. It's not like happening or anything like that, but I'm like the kind of person where I don't need to move to a big city. I feel like I don't really need that to make moves or, you know, to be like creative or anything like that. I kind of like having, you know, it's just like the pace is just like a little bit slower.
Right.
You know?
Would you qualify it as a small town?
No. I mean, it's one of the bigger cities in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Definitely in top 10, but I don't know. Not top five. But, yeah, pretty big.
And are you is it generations there of your family? How far back?
Oh man, very far back.
Really?
I mean,
farther than great grandparents?
I think my great grandparents came over from Poland.
I was gonna ask if you're Scranton. Is it like a Polish town?
Yeah. So there's some weird stuff. Like, not weird, but there's a branch of, like, it's not a branch. There's I guess it's its own religion.
Yeah.
Called like Polish National Catholic, and they split from the Roman Catholic Church based on like political differences, not like ideology, really.
Right.
Just because Europeans weren't really being treated that fair or something in the church, right? But so there's a Polish National Catholic Church, and they don't follow the Pope; they follow their prime bishop.
Uh-huh.
And like the Vatican is Scranton, Pennsylvania.
No way.
Yeah.
So you guys are like the Salt Lake City of Polish Catholicism.
Yeah, it's weird. So like when my like great grandparents came over, they were they were probably like the first people in that church, and then like my grandmother very involved and stuff like that. My mom, there's some differences. Like, priests can get married, and
my mom's Roman Catholic, and she like fully thinks that priests should be able to. She's like a liberal Catholic kind of.
Yeah. So my mom's married to a priest. My mom got remarried to
a
priest, and he was married. And
So he's been divorced and remarried.
Yeah.
Oh wow. So like, yeah, Polish Catholic National, Polish National Catholic Church is fucking lit.
Yeah. Pretty liberal. And I'm not like religious or anything like that,
right.
But he's like a senior priest, and his father was the prime bishop. That's like the Pope, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's really weird. It's like a weird thing that I feel like not a lot of people know about.
Does that mean like his family's like fucking royalty kind
of?
Yeah,
within the church, yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
So does that hold a lot of status in Scranton then?
I guess if you're still into religion and stuff, from what my grandmother tells me, there's not a lot of people showing up at church. So,
I mean, that seems to be a general trend overall in our country. So both sides of the family were from Scranton. So you had grandparents alive on both sides and everything.
Yeah. My dad's side of the family was like Scottish, but they came right to Scranton.
Okay. And being that, you have that kind of like community around us, I mean, you had a big ass family and just like a support system on both sides.
Yeah. Huge family.
How's that?
It's, pretty good. I mean, a lot of my family moved away. Like, my mom moved to Boston, my sister moved to Rhode Island, and then like all of my mom's brothers and sisters are like scattered now, you know, Florida, Maryland, stuff like that. But they were there when I was younger, and on my dad's side, they're all still local. So yeah, I mean, growing up, I had a huge family. When I was playing in bands and stuff, they were super supportive. Like, my cousin is a graphic designer. She did my first band's artwork, you know, stuff like that.
So just one sister then?
Yeah, just one sister.
Okay, and are you older or younger?
I'm older. She is, like, 23.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So what – were you artistic as a kid?
I don't know. I read a lot. Yeah. Not, like – yeah, not particularly. I read a lot when I was like starting around like seventh grade. I started taking piano lessons.
Yeah. On your own accord or because you had to?
I didn't have to. I think my parents just wanted me to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So like I went, my sister went, you know, whatever. I kind of stuck with it, and then I started playing guitar, and then, you know, from there. I was just hooked on just making stuff.
Right.
You know, I wanted to write songs. I wanted to sing for a band, like, forever. That's all I wanted to do. But it's hard to tell people that you want to sing in a band without...
Were you a quiet kid?
I don't know. I was probably a weird kid. I don't think I was like super popular or anything like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get
I was probably lame?
Did you get into like skating or anything? Or like, I mean, I don't. Mm. This is not meant to sound offensive, but I don't take you for like a you don't look like a baseball player or a football player or anything like that. So I don't imagine you were like.
When I was real young, I did play baseball. I mean, throughout Little League, I played baseball. I was like all star. I was in the all stars.
Oh shit!
But like, I wasn't really that great.
Right.
And I didn't. I tried a lot of sports, but I was pretty awful at them. I was bad at skateboarding. I was bad at like anything like that.
So you just dove into music.
Yeah.
And so what were the records that were changing your life when you're in seventh grade? Because that's like one of the that's that year where you like figure out I'm this kind of music listener.
Yeah, seventh grade, that's when I would probably like first have started calling myself a punk.
Yeah.
So it definitely like Blink-182. But then also
so
like
the later California punk revolution.
Yeah, but then I had like I mean, because I had like my friends' older brothers around and stuff, I was into what they were into. So like, I got into, like, Leftover Crack and Choking Victim and Rancid, like, right around then, you know, because they were in high school listening to that stuff. And, like, I would hear them playing it, and then I would go home and immediately download it on LimeWire or something like that. You know, like, I just, any punk music, The Casualties, anything like
Operation
that.
Operation Ivy.
Operation Ivy, yeah, dude, you name it.
Were you like a NoFX guy?
Yeah, like NoFX.
Yeah. I liked Face to Face a lot, MXPX.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had my like punk phase as a kid. I actually don't really bring it up that much on this show, but I loved punk rock music, and it was kind of that same it was that wave where it was hitting MTV, but then if you like got on the internet, you could find the shit that like was like more underground than like the shit on MTV, you feel me? Like Blink-182 and Green Day were like the entry level shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So how long was it from the piano until you picked up a guitar?
I think about, man, it wasn't long. It was probably only about a year.
Mm-hmm.
I know I got one for Christmas, and then it had to have been like between seventh and eighth grade or something like that. Because by ninth grade, like I was already in bands. Like when I went to high school, I was already in bands and stuff like that.
That's hella cool. So how did you meet other kids that were like playing music and stuff? Like how do you meet a drummer and a bassist?
It's like you find the other kids who listen to Blink-182 in your middle school class, and there's not that many of them.
Right.
And so there was that. And again, like all of their older brothers were in bands, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would just watch them, dude. I would go over to my friend's house to hang out with them, and then I would go watch their brother's band's practice.
And what's that culture like, just in the garage you're watching?
Yeah, in the garage or a basement.
Was Scranton a town where there were like backyard shows where people had like an empty garage and then they would play out of there?
Yeah.
And just like what, kegs and shit or no?
No, like maybe 40s like in the car or something like that before.
Yeah.
I probably didn't start that until like maybe sophomore or junior, like right when Tiger Shaw like really first started playing a lot of house shows and stuff, I was introduced to like 40s, no kegs or anything like
that. Yeah, that's the thing is that growing up in Alaska, we didn't have a fucking music scene at all. I just had like MTV and the internet and whatever. But then when I moved to California, I saw this shit late. Like I didn't see my first show like this until I was probably like 25. But I remember hearing about this like underground backyard punk rock show where it was just local bands that were on this little like backyard circuit, and there were about 50 kids that showed up, and they knew all of the words to every song of this band that I had never fucking heard of, and they were playing out of an empty garage, and I was like, whoa, this is like the most grassroots thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Was it like that?
Yeah, it was like that. Yeah. It was like that. If it wasn't like that, it was like VFWs or even like Battle of the Bands. Like we're, you know, we'd go and just take them over. We'd be like, this is a show now, you know, this is a punk show now or something like that. Like so stupid, you know?
Right.
Still competing for like $100 or something like that. But it was either that or VFWs or I mean, that's pretty much it. There was a skate park called Sessions with a Z at the end.
That's sick.
They had a lot of punk bands, like a lot of local punk bands and a lot of touring punk bands coming through.
Right.
Because Scranton is like, if you're looking on a map, it's kind of, if you're a band, trying to map your tour.
It's out of the way.
It's right between Philadelphia and New York City.
Yeah.
So if some people don't want to do that drive for whatever reason, it's like an hour and a half.
Right.
They stop in Scranton.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of touring bands coming through. And
was there like an all-ages venue that was really popular?
That was Sessions. Yeah, okay. That was the skate park. And then there was a place called Cafe Metropolis. And those two places were like it, you know. There was always shows there. And,
sick.
Yeah.
What was it? Was the first band wasn't Tiger Jaw, was it?
No.
Okay, what was the
first band? Was called Cosmos. It was a ska band.
You were in a ska band?
Yeah, dude. Oh. Ska was like what was so big. Like
that was the hottest shit.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah. Okay, so like I said, my mom's from Easton, and so when I would go visit there, I remember one time I went when I was 16, and her best friend from high school, right, had a son that was exactly my age, and we didn't have like record stores and shit, so he was like, he's like, oh, what kind of music do you listen to? And I'm like, oh, you know, like fucking NoFX. And he's like, what? You like punk rock? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I got to take you to the store. I'm going to show you everything. He like showed me all these like old 7-inches. And he got me a bunch of like, Skankin' Pickles, I think.
Yeah, Skankin' Pickles.
And he got me Hepcat
CDs.
He's there, like, you gotta check out all these ska bands. Cause like in the mid 90s, that was like the hottest shit.
Mm-hmm. Hepcat's a weird one. Hepcat's like, yeah, I feel like that's like you have to really know about ska to know about Hepcat.
I'm out here, bro.
I mean, yeah, dude, that's it. Hepcat. We were like the Pie Tasters would come around a lot. Like,
yeah,
because we had all these local ska bands. I feel like if you were a touring ska band, then you'd want to come to Scranton because
there's a family.
There's a huge scene. Yeah,
yeah. Like,
Pie Tasters, the Toasters,
the Toasters,
the Slackers, like. There's so many, and I was playing with those bands. Like, we were opening for them. We were terrible, dude.
Really?
We were terrible.
How big was your ska band? Like, did you
every band was popular then.
But, I don't mean big. Like, oh, I mean, like, how many people were, like, did you have a full horn section?
No. Okay. It was a ska punk band. So
okay.
It was, I think, 5 people. We had a singer. I sang for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we got another singer. He's now in the Menzingers, that band from Epitaph. I might mention them a lot because they were really influential on me. They were all the older brothers that, you know, that stuck with it and stuff and helped me. I remember asking, like, the singer of that band who was his younger brother was my drummer. And I was like, how do you play ska on a guitar? Like, I don't get it. And he taught me how. Like,
because it's like an offbeat that you're strumming on, right? Like, you're not strumming on the ones and in threes.
No, it's the twos and the fours.
Yeah, and it makes no sense. I remember having a guitar as like a sophomore in high school trying to figure out how to play ska and reggae and going like, why can't I do this?
It's the twos and the fours.
Yeah, it's hard, huh?
Yeah.
But that's so tight. Oh, man, I have a funny story. Like, remember when Real Big Fish got really big?
Yeah.
No pun intended. I was like, that band was like so cool to me for like that one song they had. And so a couple years ago, one of my friends was like friends with the, I don't know, trombonist or somebody in the band now. Cause they're like one of those touring bands where there's like only 2 of the original members left or something. And we ended up going to their show and I ended up on their tour bus afterwards, and I'm going like, wow, man, the 13-year-old me would be like so hyped right now, but like the current me is like so sad for these dudes because like the tour bus was so just depressing and like, I don't know, it was funny.
Real Big Fish.
So yeah, sorry. Real Big Fish. You guys seemed cool though. Anyway, so what was the how did that band end?
Cosmos.
Cosmos.
I forget. Politics. 12-year-old, 13-year-old.
Oh, you were
politics.
That young?
Yeah. I mean, what, 7th and 8th grade? How old are you?
Yeah,
like 12 or 13,
right?
I was out of it by high school. I started Tiger Show, and I think I was in 9th grade. So
really?
I was like 14 or 15.
No,
maybe a little bit later. Maybe I was like 15.
Right. Yeah. So it's just like, hey, man, Tommy, you kissed Becky, and you're not supposed to do that. It's my girl.
I think it was, it might have been girl related. I think it was like, my parents were pretty strict, and, everyone in the ska band that I was in, Cosmos, would like go up to this one kid's house and drink, and like I wasn't allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, "You guys suck, you know. I'm out. I quit." this is stupid, you know?
Because you were like bummed that you couldn't drink with them, so you're trying to cover it?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm like, you guys are the...
Well, tell me about your parents being strict. Was this like before your folks split or like...
Oh, yeah, my folks split. My folks. I just said that because you said it, but...
What would you say, my parents?
I would say my parents. Yeah. I don't think I've ever said folks. No, my parents split like when I was 18 or 19.
Later, yeah. You know?
So they were pretty strict. My mom was pretty strict. My dad was not strict. My dad had like drug problems and stuff like that. Like drinking and then like drugs and stuff like that. And it was all mixed like together, you know? So that was like probably like right around the same time like I was starting to play music like 7th and 8th grade. I was probably like 13 or something like that, right? And he was like going to rehab and stuff. So my mom was like very you know, like very conscious of
trying to hold it down.
Yeah. Trying to hold it down and trying not to let us drink because, like, obviously that was like something toxic
runs
in that environment.
Family or something.
Exactly. But
what did your mom do for work?
She is like an executive at
You don't have to say the company.
It's at a college.
So she's like in academia.
A little bit. She's in like they call it product management. Oh, okay. But I mean, it's she's essentially like coming up with new courses and stuff like that, new college courses and stuff like that.
Right. And so before dad started getting mixed up and stuff, what was he doing?
He was like just working in a warehouse, like where she worked, like you know, like in the fulfillment center, and then like doing like weird stuff, like odd jobs. But then, so my mom's mom runs a funeral home in Scranton. And
so if you ever die in Scranton,
Gorgel Funeral Home.
Look up ahead.
I might be owning that soon. I'm gonna try and buy it, but
hey, that's very goth boy.
Yeah, right. Like that's the thing. Like I have roots, you know. Like I grew up around this. I saw bodies all the time, you know. And
you're like a real fucking 6 feet under family.
And so when my dad got like clean for the first time, like after he went to rehab. He went and got his mortuary license to like practice, and then he became like the person running that funeral home. So he was doing that for a few years.
Wow.
But then like, you know, he would like go to rehab a lot and stuff like that. So
was it kind of rocky in the household a lot then?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I mean, they were just fighting a lot, and it was like weird because like, you never knew, you know, like you don't know if he's hiding stuff or stuff like that. So yeah, that was always like rocky. There was like weird phases, like phases where he would get like super into religion or something like that.
Right, my because mom was all about, addicts are extreme.
Yeah.
You know?
Weightlifting was another thing. Like all of a sudden,
right,
within weeks, he was like a huge weightlifter, you know?
Right, because you have to have something to occupy that fucking busy part of your brain or you're just going to get back into the junk.
Yeah, so he was like collecting. What was he collecting? He was collecting soda machines. He was collecting gumball machines.
Wow.
But like old gumball machines.
Right.
You know, like very specific.
Yeah.
Would
he try to get you into that kind of stuff so you guys had something to bond over? Or was it just his own thing?
If I became interested in something, he would like take that interest too. So I mean that was cool. Like when I first started getting into comic books, like he would take me to conventions and like buy me whatever, like Pokemon cards.
When you got into Sky, he started teaching you to skank.
Yeah, he was taking me to shows and stuff. Yeah, I probably taught him, but like he was like driving us to shows and stuff.
No shit,
you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much you would want to talk about this, but what kind of drugs was it? Or like, was it mainly alcohol?
It was like mainly alcohol and then like pills. I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure now because when it started, I was pretty young, so I don't know if my parents would even tell me if it was pills.
Right.
You know?
But
it
seems
just said
like
alcohol because later became pills. Yeah, exactly. So it later became pills. But then it was even like weird stuff. Like, and I'm not really even going to get too much into it, but it was everything, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like whatever. Like whatever was around. Once I went to college, like, so I was like, I think I was going into my second year in college. I was like 19 or something. My sister was like 14 or 15 or something. Like, I think my mom and him were just like, this isn't working or whatever. And obviously, like, that's tough for any marriage, you know?
Yeah. Well, but that at that age for you, since you're kind of like aware, you're, you know, young adult, like, did it seem like this is a relief that they're like splitting? I mean,
No, I get that.
Yeah.
It probably would have been if I knew that, like, things with him were more solid.
Yeah.
If it was, like, if they were just, like, fighting and, like, drugs weren't involved or anything like that,
yeah,
I would have definitely thought it was a relief. I'd be like, all right, they're finally out of each other's hair, you know?
Right.
But now I was like, well, like, now what? You know, like, now there's...
Who's going to take care of him?
Yeah, exactly. So, and that didn't really work out. Like, I tried that for a little bit.
I hear about that dynamic so much of, like, the dad who's so reliant on the mother that it's like, if she leaves, like, what's he going to do? Because she's the one that's been keeping him afloat. And I don't come – I come from a family relationship not too far off from that, you know? So what ends up happening when they split?
I would say there was, like, about – man, not even a year. I would say even as little as, like, 4 months where, like, me and my sister and, like, my dad were trying to make things work.
Between them?
Well, no, not – I'm sorry. We were trying to like, trying to just make that whole, like – like, it was – see, it was weirder for me because I was away at college. Yeah. I went to school in Scranton, but I got, like, a scholarship, so I lived on campus.
Yeah.
But so I was, like, out of the house, you know? And my dad was, like, living in an apartment. So we were trying to, like, spend equal time. Like, I would, like, try and go over,
right,
you know, their house for dinner each, like, once or twice in a week. But then, like, you notice that, like, my dad was, like, showing up, like, messed up and stuff or, like, canceling or, right, like, falling asleep. And you were like, all right. I was like, this isn't really working, you know. So – and I can't even, like, imagine myself doing this now because it seems so hard. But I was definitely talking to him then. I remember talking to him. Being like, this has to stop, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, but it didn't. And then he, like, moved away. I think there was, yeah, that was it. I mean, it didn't. I stopped talking to him. I think my sister stopped talking to him.
And that's it.
Yeah, and that was it, pretty much. I haven't talked to him in, like, a pretty long time.
Since you're, like, 19?
Yeah.
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 Man, I'm sorry to hear that.
No, it's cool.
You know, here's the thing.
That happens to people.
It does. And we have a recurring theme on this show that all the listeners who are tuned in now know that it's like all fucking art comes from dad issues, bro. Like, it's the realest shit. Everybody that I have on this show, we all have the dad issues.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
That makes sense, dude.
Yeah. I always like wonder... I'm getting to that age now where I'm like, ooh, I want to have kids and shit. And I'm like, am I going to be able to break that curse or am I going to make an artist as well by being a piece of shit? Oh, not a piece of shit. I'm not saying that about your dad. I'm saying dads in general. You know what I'm saying? So
there's a lot of good dads out there, though. Shout out to good dads.
I haven't met them, but hey.
No, I've met some good dads. I know some good dads.
Oh, fuck, man.
Mr. Breyer, if you're listening.
Shout out, Mr. Breyer.
Dad. Yeah, you're a good dad.
All right. Damn, so fuck. I'm sorry to take it there so soon.
No, it's cool.
Yeah, that could have gone one of a few ways because sometimes I get into those stories and people go, yeah, and then my dad died. And I'm like, oh fuck.
Yeah. No, my dad's not dead.
yeah. Well, so how did that affect your well-being breaking? Like, is it one of those things now where you don't think about it that often or do you think about, like, I need to, like, get this right?
No, I don't think about it that often. I move on, like, pretty quick from everything.
Right.
You know, nothing really hits me that hard. It really doesn't, you know. I had family members, like, and people have had it way worse than me, so I'm not trying to say that. I'm just trying to say that, like, it wasn't like I was, sheltered up until, like, the point that my parents got divorced,
right,
you know, like that. Like, there was a lot going on in my family. I had family members die, like,
right,
you know, like, younger than they should have and stuff like that. So it wasn't, like, a huge thing for me. It really wasn't.
Right, so something that, like, hardened you up.
Right, and maybe it did a little bit, but at the time I felt like, you know, I'd learned to deal with stuff like that, and, you know.
Right.
My mom tried to make me go see a therapist, but he was like, there doesn't seem to be a problem here.
Really?
You know? Yeah.
So you didn't take to the therapy?
No, no, not because I had any problem with it. It just, I think he was just like, yeah, he seems fine.
He's like, it's cool, dude. Yeah. I like Tiger's jaw. It's dope.
Yeah.
He's like, just use it.
Good.
Use it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not writing about dads in any songs. All my songs are about girls.
Right. But all your girl issues are because of your dad, bro.
Probably.
So you start Tiger's jaw when you're 14.
Yeah, 14 or 15.
14 or 15. And who is it with?
It's just me and Ben Walsh, who's he's still in it now. He's singing and writing songs.
Okay.
He was drumming at the time. I met him at a show. I did an acoustic show at this art space called Test Pattern.
Uh-huh.
And that was, like, you know, when we were in high school, that was another place that that let us kind of do whatever, put on shows and stuff. I was doing sound at that place for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, it was cool. So I did an acoustic show there and I met Ben. And I mean, within like, within a few weeks, like we were playing together doing, I just wanted to be like in an indie band. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know, that's mm-hmm. That's where my head was at.
And did you guys become like legitimate friends or just work buddies?
No, absolutely friends.
Friends.
We were in every band together. Like,
how many other bands have you been in?
Man, we were in so many. I was in, so many. I was in The Green Chair. Ben was in all these bands too. We were in a band called The Green Chair. There's a hardcore band from Wilkes-Barre called Bad Seed. We were in that. We get kicked out of all these bands too.
Why do you guys get kicked out?
I don't know. we're not like problems,
right?
I don't know what the deal is,
right?
The Green Chair, maybe we are problems, but I don't think we are. The Green Chair, Bad Seed, Captain We're Sinking, that's still a band too. They're on Run for Cover.
Yeah,
very good friends of ours. We were in that. We were in we had another band called Jerry Dandridge. Man, so many bands.
Right. But all kind of living in the same world or like different subgenres?
Yeah, pretty much all in the same world. And Bassy was a hardcore band. Captain We're Sinking was a little bit more punk, but we were also playing shows together. And stuff
right.
Like that.
And so is it something where you guys were just dipping your toes in, like kind of spreading your chips? Mm-hmm. So like if anything worked with any of them, you were there? Or what?
Yeah, pretty much. Like we knew Tiger Shell was like it, you know, like we knew like this is our thing, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, we were free all summer and stuff like that.
Right.
So, like, and I had a garage. Like, my parents had a really big garage and stuff that we could practice in.
Yeah.
Sometimes we would practice in my grandmother's funeral home, too.
Really?
Yeah, later, like, after we had some neighbors complain, so we moved, like, exclusively down there for years. We were practicing in the funeral home.
Just, like, with, like, dead bodies in the next room?
Yeah, like upstairs.
Vibes, dude.
Yeah.
Some crazy
and
vibes.
And bands would come over to, like, practice and open up and see a body being embalmed.
Dip the joints in formaldehyde and shit.
People would be freaking out.
Oh, God. That's crazy. Well, okay, so I didn't know about I've honestly only heard a couple Tiger's Jaw songs, and the only reason I've heard about it is just because they were like, oh, yeah, Wicca Phase used to be in this band. And I went, I didn't get big into the emo scene. Like, I had already kind of left the punk rock phase behind me by the time emo got popularized. So this is the portion of the show for the people that don't listen to that kind of music. I want you to just, like, big yourself up, because I feel like Tiger's Jaw must have either a big or a cult following, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about, like, some of your accomplishments or achievements with Tiger Jaw, because I don't know about him and I don't think people listening will know.
That's fine, man. I mean, what I wanted that band to be was I wanted to get signed to that label. I wanted to get signed to Prison Jazz Records, which is an indie label, and we did that. Like, I mean, they put out our first album, and then
how did the first album do?
Well, at first, I mean, it did well among our fans, but we didn't really have a following. Like, we were still in high school.
Right.
So.
And this is, like, predates modern social media. This is, like, MySpace era?
MySpace, songs on MySpace.
Okay, cool.
Exactly. We were doing that, but then, we were playing a lot of shows locally, you know, and, I guess we were, like, one of the bigger bands locally. And then we went on tour with a band called Title Fight.
Uh-huh.
And Title Fight is from, like, I mean, 20 minutes from where we're from.
Uh-huh.
And that was, like, what really brought Tiger's Jaw into prominence, I think, was that tour. From there, we got signed to Run for Cover Records. And, I mean, they've gone on and put out some pretty big records and some really good records.
Right.
What
year was this, like, 05?
This was, like, closer to, like, 07. Yeah. I was, like, a freshman in college when we signed to that label. And then, we did a bunch of tours. We did, I guess it was four albums, like, four full-length albums all together.
And what was you guys' dynamic? It was you and your you and Ben?
Yeah, so Ben eventually moved to guitar and vocals. He was playing drums for a while, but then he started writing songs, and he's good at any instrument.
So initially you were writing the songs, and then it moved into, like, you guys were both writing songs?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
And what's the dynamic like? Because, like I said, I'm not that familiar. Are you guys, tag-teaming vocals on a lot of songs, or is it, like, if you wrote the song, you sang it, and if he wrote the song, he sang it?
Pretty much that.
Okay.
the latter one, yeah. Where, yeah, we would just write songs independently, try and, you know, make them sound cohesive with one another.
Right.
A lot of times, Ben would come at me more and have an open verse, mm-hmm. you know, that needed to be filled. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't really do that too much. I like to have songs finished. Mm-hmm. But Ben was always good at, like, harmonies and, like, leads, like, guitar leads. I was never really good at that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was really good at filling that out. So it was us two. It was our friend Brianna Collins.
Shout out Brianna Collins.
Yeah, shout out Brianna Collins. She's still in the band. Okay. Her and Ben are still in the band.
So did she start playing drums for you guys or what?
No, she played keyboard. And sang. Yeah. Okay. And then,
so did you guys just forego drums?
We had just like fill-in drummers all the time.
Okay.
All the time. And then finally...
When you would record the records, would Ben play the drums and then just whoever you could get to fill in the drums that night live, that's how it would be?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's like a real Dave Grohl motherfucker.
He's so good at everything he does to this day. So then we started like playing house shows, and there was this one kid, Dennis, who's like my best friend now, but he's definitely one of my best friends without a doubt. But
hey, that's no shade at you, Ben. You're a best friend too.
Yeah, I know. That's what I started thinking in my head. And I was like, oh, I hope Ben doesn't think that Dennis...
Ben and Dennis, you guys both hold a special place in Adam's heart.
They know.
All right.
But Dennis started putting on house shows. He was in a really cool band called Three Man Cannon. They're still touring and stuff like that. But he was playing bass for them, and they had a really good drummer named Pat. And we were like, we want both of them. Like, we didn't have a bassist, I think, for a while.
Right.
So we were like, we want both of them. And then they both joined. Nice. So it was the five of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so do you guys get to the point where you're like the headlining fucking touring act and you're doing national tours?
Yeah, we were doing national tours.
What were your big markets?
Philadelphia was big. New York was big. Yeah. Boston, like Cleveland, Ohio, Cleveland, I feel like we were going there a lot. Richmond, Virginia, like Northeast, you know, stuff like that. I only went on like one full U.S. tour where we were out on the West Coast with them.
Yeah, and that was the show in California got broken up.
Exactly. We went to like the U.K. and
stuff
like that. Yeah,
how did it do out there? Good.
Yeah, really well. That's so crazy. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is all around the time that you're going. Yeah, that you're a freshman in college.
Yeah.
And so is that helping you like? Socially, like, are you like the man on campus? Because everybody's like, oh my god, there's that singer from Tiger's Trial.
No one knew. And to this day, no one cares.
Really?
No one cares.
Locally.
Really? I can't play a show locally. No one's coming.
But if you go to like certain cities, it's like, oh my god, there's Adam.
Yeah, sometimes.
Really? Isn't that such a weird thing? Like, where if you're in the right city, you're like a god, or like you're like this deity, and then if you're at your own grocery store, everyone's like, man, hurry the fuck up in line.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's a strange.
That's why I come out here to LA.
Right.
People know me.
Right. There you go.
Treat me with respect. No, I had like a steady girlfriend. Like, I wasn't like, you know.
You weren't trying to use your fame for scumbag reasons?
No, I just want to use my fame to get a steady girlfriend.
Right.
That's what I wanted, you know, at the time. But.
How did that work out?
Not that great.
But that's more inspiration for songs.
Yeah.
And so it worked out perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So I mean, I was like touring. Here's the thing. I was like still in school. We would tour during the summers, during winter breaks, like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And everyone was in college. And then I graduated college, broke up with that girlfriend, and then I was, like, touring a lot. Like, then I was, Tiger Shaw was touring. I did, like, my first solo, like, Wicca Phase tour before it was even called Wicca Phase. I think I was growing under my real name.
Uh-huh.
I did, like filling. I was, like, playing guitar for bands. Like, I was just, like, yeah, I was all over. I was always touring. I think there was, like, a six-month period where I was just, like, maybe not 6 months, but it was a few months where I was on tour a lot, like, just doing whatever, you know? And I think that's when I was like, well, I kind of want to do more, you know? I think there's more I can do. And here's the thing, like, I'm not, when Tiger's Jaw started, I had a very clear direction for it.
Right.
But as we started playing with bands, you know, we went on that tour with Title Fight. So then we were kind of popular in that scene, like the emo, like, you know, like the softer side of the hardcore scene, you know?
Yeah.
People could go to hardcore shows or they can come see Tiger Shaw and Title Fight and
is stuff that like that. Something like Spitting or is that a band?
Kind of like Spitting?
Kind of like Spitting?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not really too familiar with them, but I bet you're close.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, it's cool.
From what I heard from Tiger's Jaw, I was like, oh, this reminds me of this other band that Adam from Ham has played me called Kind of Like Spitting.
Yeah.
But I confused all your
music. That might be close.
Yeah. So you got popular in that scene, but then you were like, I don't know if this is what I want forever?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I felt like, I don't know if you really want to get into this now, but I felt like... and it wasn't, it didn't have anything to do with getting older. It was just like the longer that I was doing Tiger's Jaw, the more, and we weren't really like producing a lot of new songs. And this is the way that's the pace that bands work. You know?
You start, all the big boom is at the beginning.
Yeah. And then you write 10 songs and then you record an album and that takes like 3 years, two years, 3 years.
Right.
And I wanted everything to be quicker, but we weren't practicing a lot. We were some people in Tiger Shaw moved to Philadelphia. It was hard to practice.
Yeah.
And I was visiting my girlfriend on the weekends like an idiot.
And everybody grows up and you grow a little bit of distance.
Yeah.
That's what happens with every crew of any sort of band or rap shit or anything, I think.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. But I felt like it got away from me, you know?
Right.
Like I kind of distanced myself from... You know, as stuff got more serious and we had to start thinking about tours and deal, like, you know.
The cuts of, like, who gets what percent of what.
And this was even before that. Yeah. Like, we didn't know anything, you know. Well, we had to start thinking about that. Like, yeah, like, forming an LLC and stuff like that. And I just, like, checked out. I was like, this isn't what I want. I don't really care about any of this. I wanted to be on that one label in Scranton and we're pretty far past that now, and I don't really have a direction for this anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Ben did. Like, Ben was able to find a direction for it and did a really good job. I mean, he had me there. He had to, like, drag me along, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he had to drag Pat and Dennis along, too. They were the same way, where they were pretty grassroots and stuff and didn't really see a need to expand, you know?
Ben was a big idea guy.
He was able to talk to you know, the people from our label and our touring, like our tour booker. What am I trying to say? Booking agent.
Right.
And I just wasn't like I wasn't. I didn't care about it. So then I would become sarcastic or something. I'd check out. You know, I just don't care about that.
He's got that. I was just talking about this with somebody earlier, but. As an independent artist, you have to balance out the art side and the business side.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are really good at the business side and their art suffers because of it. And you can, and that those are artists that get deemed corny. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got some people that are really good at the art side and are shitty at fucking business and relations. And those are like the mythical, like, those are like the fucking MF Doom types or something where it's like these iconic, like people that are rare as fuck, you know? But then you got the people that have that perfect balance of like business and art.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that can really get places.
Yeah.
Ben sounds like maybe that kind of guy.
He is.
Yeah.
He absolutely is.
There you go.
And I don't know, not necessarily that I'm not that kind of guy, but
I
needed more time to do it.
But it also sounds like maybe you didn't want to deal with, like, you wanted to deal on your own time schedule, kind
of. Yeah, that's true, too.
When people tend to, I feel like when artists want to go solo, it's because, like, you have this creative vision internally that you want to just be able to get out on your own, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is it that you're listening to at that time that makes you think, like, I should apply these songwriting talents over this, like, different style of music?
I just wanted to do, like, electronic music. So I don't know exactly what I was listening to. Probably, like, Twin Shadow or, like, New Order or something like that. I just wanted to do electronic music. I didn't know what it was. In no way at all was it rap influence. Like, I wasn't listening to really any rap then.
Well, because I hear it now and I'm like, oh, maybe it could be as easily inspired by, like, Fetty Wap and Blink-182 as it could be from, like, Depeche Mode and Old Morrissey and shit.
Yeah, it was the Smiths.
Yeah.
It was and it is stuff like that. It was the Smiths. It was, like... But at the same time, it was like Mike Skinner in the Streets. Like,
Tricky.
Yeah, Tricky, exactly. And I think, like, And the more like underground people at that time that I probably would have started listening to then were like Das Racist or something. Yeah. I can pinpoint like a very specific event where like I went to this Halloween party with my friend. His sister was throwing it at some barn. And it was like in the middle of nowhere, but they brought out this band from New York City, Gordon Voidwell. Mm-hmm. And they were, it was almost like watching Prince on stage. I mean, the dude was so charismatic. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this exists. Like, and this dude is like mythical, you know? Mm-hmm. And I want to do something like that. So there was definitely like something there. I don't exactly know what it was, and I don't know if I can pinpoint it to anything that I was listening to specifically.
Right.
It was a lot of being on the internet and just.
What year was this?
Was probably 2010.
That's wow.
Excuse me, 2010.
Yeah.
2009, 2010. Yeah, I was about like probably 21, 22.
Right.
Yeah.
Because now. It seems, I don't know, to contextualize what it is that you're doing for people that are hearing the interview before they're hearing your music, my goal with this is to get people to go check you out. The way that I explain you and artists like Peep and Horsehead to people who are all, you guys are all GBC, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Goth Boy Click. I try to explain it to people that are my age as like, with what I just said, I was like, yo, it sounds like if Blink-182 and Fetty Wap, like, fucking linked up, you know? Like, it's like this strange emo, punk rock, like, kind of one-note melody where you're, like, staying on that one keynote for, like, catchy earworms, but over, like, dark trap beats, mm-hmm. right? How long, and the thing is that all of you guys that have found each other and clicked up now, like, are this your own little, your crew is like its own genre, mm-hmm. kind of, right?
It's, yeah, that's Lil
Tracy.
It is now.
Yeah, shout out Lil Tracy. And so, did you guys just all kind of serendipitously find each other after like all making this kind of music, or how did that morph into something?
I can tell you how it happened for me in two quick steps. The first one was like I was on Tumblr a lot and, I was following Jay, who's Cold Heart.
Okay.
And this was before, like, I knew anything about his music. He was just, like, popular on Tumblr.
Yeah.
And then I saw that he started, like, reposting his, like, beats that he did or something like that. And his beats were just amazing. It was, like, right around the time, like, you know, I was listening to, like, Salem and, like, you know, any Witch House stuff like that. Right. And there wasn't really that much Witch House that you could find.
Witch like, House was a that's a very obscure right? subgenre that existed in, like, 2011 and disappeared.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And there's probably, like, four Witch House people that, you know, right. like, made or bands. Right. I mean, but Jay was, like, making beats that were, like, Witch House beats.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Right.
Then he found out that I was in Tiger's Jaw and that I was doing this Wicca Phase thing.
Yeah. What did the original Wicca Phase stuff sound like?
It was like keyboard loops, okay. like keyboard drum loops. And
Like
and,
real 8-bit sounding? Or
what? Not so much 8-bit, but I mean, definitely more Depeche Mode than
okay, yeah.
Chief Keef.
I got you. Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, so then I started doing stuff with him. And that was like my first, you know, internet connection with someone.
Uh-huh.
Then the second,
and he's produced a lot of your
stuff. He's produced a lot of my stuff. He's produced a lot of all of our stuff. You know,
did he do a tape with Peep? No.
He did some songs for Peep, I think.
Horsehead too?
Horsehead, yeah. Okay. I mean, Jay produced for like Lil B and stuff like that. Like,
okay.
You know, we knew he was like really good.
Okay.
So that was like the first thing. So I was talking to him, but then and we might have even started Goth Boy Click like that early, like
really?
Shortly, where we were just like, let's give ourselves a name, me and you know?
Right.
And then the second like part of this equation is NetArb. And NetArb came out of nowhere. I don't know. I don't remember.
I can tell you NetArb's background story because like I got – we'll compare NetArb's stories.
I mean mine was – I had no background, no like – I had nothing. I was at that point. I was like scrambling. I knew there was other people doing what I was doing, but right. I didn't know who they were or where they were. So I was getting like weird people on features. Anyone I would meet on the internet, I'd be like, "Oh, I just met this person on the internet. They could do a feature on my album. Right. No regard to quality or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
But then Netar sent me a message on Twitter. It had to have been that. And just said, hey, you know, there's this rapper named MacNed. And
yeah.
MacNed runs Thrax House. And he wants you in it. And Cold Heart's in it. And I was like, all right. It was that. It was that easy. And then from there, I mean, that's when we all met. You know, that's when I met Horsehead. That's when I met Tracy. That's when I met MacNed, Netar, you know.
Yeah. So around, crazy. So here's some background. I don't know if Ned would talk about this to people or not. But so back when Ned was still in college, he was going to like some small, I want to say like liberal arts college or something, where he met Milo, who's another rapper. Shout out Milo. He was the fifth ever podcast guest on this show, and we're on 118 right now. So that shows you how long I've known that guy. And Ned was like almost pseudo managing him, but really just kind of like the buddy that was like zealous for him and was like, Milo's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so he used to hit me up on Facebook back in like 2012, 2013, or like 2013, I guess, on some like, yo man, hey, I'm trying to start a podcast. Like, I like your podcast. How can I get like your podcast? Yo, I'm going to move to LA. Can I intern for you? And I was like, yo, you seem like, you know, what's up. I'm like, just keep doing your shit, 'cause I don't really have any work for you to do. But when you get out here, like, let's kick it, you know? And, he was just like that. He had that perfect blend of like hunger and mm-hmm. knowledge, you know what I mean? And like I said, he's a maven. He connects everybody he connects so many different scenes,
mm-hmm.
and he's responsible for a lot of the guests I've had come on the show, to be honest. He's like the right type of young dude to have in your brain trust. And anyway, so when I met Ned, he was like very normcore, like normal ass kid. And then right around the time that you're talking about with the Thrax House shit, he had moved into a house with that dude, Milo, and then a bunch of other dudes that were like the Thrax House dudes they moved in too. And those two scenes kind of collided, where it's like this art rap scene and this Thrax scene.
Okay.
And Ned shifted over to the Thrax scene more than the art scene. And now he's like the funky dude with fucking hand tats and maybe a face tat. Yeah, he has face tats now, right? Yeah, he does.
Does he?
Yeah. And so anyway, that's Ned in a nutshell. And eventually I'll probably have an episode with Ned for you guys listening.
You should.
He's a good dude. So he says, we want you in Thrax House.
Yeah.
And then do you come out to California and meet everybody, or is it all internet shit?
No, it's all internet. Group chat. iPhone group chat. Now we're talking, you know, a few years ago. Like maybe now we're 2011, 2012 at the latest, you know. But it's group chat, and it's MacNed, it's Kenyatta. I mean, at that time, Thrax House was building, and they were getting anyone who wasn't associated with any group at that point. You know,
at that point, when you get in Thrax House, does your music start to pivot a little bit more?
Yeah, a little bit. Then it becomes a little bit more rap. You know, there's more rap beats involved and stuff like that.
Yeah, because while I would say you are definitely going in over rap beats, I wouldn't necessarily refer to what you're doing as rapping.
Yeah,
I would call it singing.
Yeah, me too. That's what I tell people.
Cool. Yeah,
I tell them I sing over rap.
Right. I hear people refer to you as a rapper, and I'm kind of like, he's a singer. That's a singer.
Yeah.
But that's such a confusing line in the sand now, because there are people like my friend Anderson Pack gets referred to as a rapper, but that to me, he's a singer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, whoever. It's such a blended line now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I did start hearing your music on rap mixes.
Yeah.
So it's got the aesthetic. I don't know. How many records have you put out as Wiccaphase?
Let me think real quick. Let me do some quick math. Like four.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, hold up. So there was one called February 13th. That was my first full length. And then there was Hell Version. That was my second one. And there was Passionate Yet. That's three. Abercrombie and Me is four. Secret Boy is five. There's five.
Mm-hmm.
Five. And then there's like a few singles or like EPs, like five song EPs, stuff like that.
Okay. So you've been productive over the last couple years.
Yeah. Yeah. I try and do like two albums a year.
And I have a question that I wonder about all of you dudes in Goth Boy Click. The lo-fi aesthetic, is it something that you're unwilling to shake? Like, you always wanted to sound lo-fi? Or is it like, if I had better gear, I'd make the same songs with better sound quality? I feel like, me personally, listening to all you guys' music, that I don't think any soul or legitimacy would be lost in a more hi-fi sound quality. But at the same time, the lo-fi aesthetic is nice too.
Yeah, I when I started Wiccaphase, like I wanted to hold on to that lo-fi aesthetic, but yeah. I mean, as soon as, like, I mean, as recently as, like, my last album, and it really wasn't until my last album, I was like, I need to have, I can't, I'm not good at mixing. Like, I just don't know how to do it. I can't mix an album all the way through. Like, it's not going to sound consistent. So, all of us now, I mean, within the past few months, have had Jans mixing our stuff. Jans is, like, a producer and a designer and stuff, and he was in Thrax House too, but he's been, like, doing our mixing too, and I think it's, for all of us, it's gotten way better. Like, it really has. So we're definitely letting go of it. Sometimes it's good to, you know, sometimes stylistically it works to have it be lo-fi.
Right. Like that's the thing is I like that sound, and I'm used to that sound, and it makes sense to me when I hear it. When I try to show it to people, they go, oh, I don't get it. It doesn't sound good. And I'm like, no, it sounds good. You just have to like appreciate the lo-fi. You know what I mean?
I understand what you're saying though. And I had that problem too. And I understand that it's kind of a necessary step for me to make it a little bit more accessible, you know?
Right.
As my lyrics, I think my lyrics are getting better and better. So I can still hold on to, you know, that aspect of it. The art is still there. It's just, it does need to be a little bit more presentable. And that's what Jans is doing for me. And I think he's doing for all of us right now.
Right. And I hope that didn't sound like me belittling.
Not at all.
That was
not
just
all,
my concern for your art because I like it.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And it's something that I recognized like about a year ago too, where I was like, this needs to stop.
Right. Well, yeah. When I first started making music as a kid, my whole goal, we started off sounding shitty and lo-fi, and our whole goal every record was to like, okay, we eventually want this sounding as good as the Chronic sounds. You know what I mean? Like, we want this to sound like, we need this bass line to bump like a Dr. Dre bass line. You know what I mean? And it was always like that quest for the perfect mix, and it became an obsession. But if you let that bother you too much, then it can take away from the creativity as well. Yada yada. So like when I listen to Horsehead, he mixes a lot of like modern slang, like modern rap slang with like you guys' similar aesthetic of singing, kind of like it's almost like bubblegum punk with rap lyrics.
Yeah,
you know what
that's
I mean?
A good description for Horsehead. Right? It really is.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, and I love that. I love that aesthetic. And are you? I don't notice you using as much like rap slang, I would say.
No, and I haven't. No, I have no reference point for that. Like, I was never, you know, at least he, like, Horsehead grew up in California and stuff and saw, like, Soulja Boy blow up and stuff like that, you know? Like, he saw all of that stuff. And I think comes just from, as much as Blink-182 is a part of his, like, upbringing, I think rap music is too. So I think that's why you'll see that creep in more. Me, I feel like I have no place because I still, you know, I was brought into this scene by Ned Harb, you know, or whatever. And it's, I wouldn't have, I wouldn't be putting rap slang into songs if I hadn't started, you know, hanging out with all these rappers.
To do
so
it.
Why would I do it now?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Where did the name, this is such a generic question, name is so fucking crazy when I tell people that I just need to ask, where did it come from? Wicca Phase Springs Eternal.
Yeah, it, I was, like, around the same time that I was hanging out with Cold Heart, or, like, talking to him, hanging out. By hanging out, I mean, like, talking on the internet.
Yeah.
I was also, like, talking to all these. I was really big into, like, underground comic book artists and stuff like that, and people who were putting out their own stuff. And,
yeah.
So I met this girl, Caroline Bren.
Shout out Caroline Bren.
Shout out Caroline Bren, but I think she goes by Clarissa Hennessy now. You can look that up, but it's not safe for work.
NSFW.
Yeah, major NSFW. But Clarissa Hennessy was, she was an artist, like an internet artist. She had a ton of like viral videos that you would never know were her, you know, like she wasn't putting her name on them and stuff like that. And she's a genius. She really is. And so I sent her some songs that I was working on, and I said, I need a name for it, and I want it to be dark. And she sent me back an email, and the email just said, Wicca Phase Springs Eternal. And I was like, that's it.
That's so dark.
That's the name.
It's perfect.
Yeah. There was no, I didn't even think about it after that.
Nice. How long was, I like didn't even realize until I started hearing your songs on mixes that my homie Cam Krills was making. Shout out Cam Krills up in Vancouver.
Thanks, Cam Krills.
Yeah, he was putting your songs on mixtapes, and then I was plucking those off of his playlist and making my own playlist with stuff, and I ended up having some of your songs on there. And then when Spooky Black's second record came out, or was it his first or second? It might have been his first record.
I think it was Black Silk. Was that his first one?
So it was the second one. You're right. So when the second record came out, I was like, why do I recognize his voice? And I'm like, oh, that's Wickaphase. How did you end up on Spooky Black, aka Corbin's second record?
I have no idea. I think it was just like Twitter message. I think he just sent me a Twitter message, and that was it. He just asked me for my email, and we talked a little bit. Maybe he knew me. I think he had heard me on a Bones song.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And might have known me through Tiger's Jaw.
Right, I've heard you on that's actually one of the songs that ended up on a mix of mine was the one that you did with Bones. Yeah, right.
That's like the equivalent of Title Fight taking Tiger's Jaw on tour. It was Bones asking me, Spooky Black asking me to do a song. But I think he heard me on that and just sent me a message on Twitter. And
had you heard of him at that point?
I had heard of him, and I was shocked, and I had no idea that he even knew about, anyone.
Right.
Because I thought he was just a viral dude. I thought he was a very good viral artist. Right. I thought it was amazing.
Right.
But I was afraid that it would get passed over really quick.
The funny thing is, of course, that video went hugely viral, and he's wearing the do-rag in it, and so it became like this kind of like, oh wow, look at this silly looking kid has such a beautiful voice. But when I actually downloaded the tape, I went, holy fuck, if I had never seen his picture, I would think this is so legit. That second record, the one that you're on, became one of my most played tapes of that year. I love that record. There's this song, I'll Take the Blame So You Don't Have To, or something I've listened to, I think it's number two on my iTunes or something. So it's almost like this crazy blessing and curse of that viral video going so ham, because he had to change his name and everything.
Yeah, and I think he handled it well.
Right, he did.
I really do.
Tastefully.
Yeah. So he hit me up for that. He sent me three beats, and I picked one, and I just recorded, and that was it. And he used it. I couldn't believe it.
Did you get a lot of response from that?
Yeah, I did.
Have you had media outlets hitting you up for interviews or anything?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Do you have a manager?
Nope.
No. Yeah, I didn't think so, because you've just been texting back and forth with me, and there's no hit my manager up.
Yeah.
No. Huh. Do you want any press to hit you up, or do you want to remain kind of mysterious? Or do you care?
I do care. Here's the thing. I mean, it can go either way. As a my personality, in and outside of music, is that I'm talkative, and so I'll talk to anyone, really. And I would like if more press hit me up, only because more people would hear my music, and I think it's good, so I would want other people to hear it. I'm not embarrassed about it.
Right.
At the same time, it's fine that they don't, because I don't know. It gives me more time to grow. I know every album is better than the next. And,
totally.
If they started picking me up now before my next album comes out, what if my next album is a million times better? I'd want them to cover that.
Right.
I don't know.
No, yeah. It is. It's this good blessing in disguise, because you are getting to kind of shed on your own right now and really, really find your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Probably for your second time, because I'm sure you felt with Tiger Jaw, you got really comfortable in that and found your voice, and now you're pivoting and refinding it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have found that interesting, that I don't see a lot of coverage for Goth Boy Click, where I saw Fader did this big thing on Dark World recently, and they seem cool, but it's, to me, what you guys are doing, not to compare art forms, or it's not a competition, but what you guys are doing is at least as valuable and marketable as what they're doing, and I'm just surprised that it's not hitting the major media yet. But I think it's going to be very soon, where there's going to be a lot of people knocking on you guys' door.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. So what else do you want to talk about? Because we're about to get out of here.
I don't know.
Anything? Did we cover it all?
I think we came pretty close.
We scratched the surface at least.
Yeah, I think we dug in a little bit deeper than the surface.
Yeah, all right. Well, I had a good time with this, and I like your music, and I'm looking forward to more of it. And I'm glad that it seems like we're one of your first interviews, which is really fucking cool. Or at least as Wickaphase. I'm sure you've done a ton for as Tiger's Jaw. where can the people find you online?
Twitter at Wickerphase, SoundCloud, Wickerphase Springs Eternal. Actually, SoundCloud, I think it's Wickerphase GBC Eternal because there's a character limit. But the URL is Wickerphase Springs Eternal.
And Wickerphase is WICCAPHASE.
Yeah.
Wickerphase.
Wickerphase.
And yeah, I mean, for you guys that are still listening, I think that if you grew up like I grew up, where you listen to multiple genres of music, this is a pretty fucking solid bastardization of a lot of the things you probably listen to. And it probably sounds like really weird to say, yeah, it's like trap music mixed with Blink-182 or trap music mixed with Green Day or whatever. But like, it sounds great. I really like it. And I think you guys will like it too if you give it a shot. That being said, if you were to give somebody a starting point, where would you tell them to start?
Secret Boy is my last album.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the one that even people who really hated Wickerphase on principle because I left Tiger's Jaw and started doing this, even they like it, you know, so that it has to be because that's what I hear from people. So I guess go there.
So check out Wickerphase Secret Boy, and that will be your entry point.
Yeah.
And with that being said, man, thank you for coming in.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. This is the part where I start rattling off a bunch of my social media stuff, and you feel free to take your headphones off. But my name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition. You can find me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can find my man, Ben Shin, behind the boards making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, base with two S's. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat and youtube.com/KindaNeat, where you're going to see my man Wickerphase perform. What's the song called that you're performing?
It's called I Reach Out to You in Song.
I Reach Out to You in Song on youtube.com/KindaNeat. And remember, if you are a weekly listener and you hear me talk about dad issues every motherfucking week because I'm obsessed, if you are that person and you have not gone to our patreon.com/KindaNeat pledge, do it this week. Just pitch in a dollar. Buy me a latte every month. It's $4 a month if you pledge $1 per episode, because we put out 4 episodes per month. That's not a lot of money. All that is like buying me a coffee every month. And like last night I ran into somebody who was like, yo, man, I listen to your podcast. Let me get your number. I want to take you out to lunch. And I wanted to be like, just go to Patreon, bro. We don't got to hang out. No, I'm just kidding. Shout out. I know you're listening. Anyway, yeah, go to patreon.com/KindaNeat. Leave me a dollar. And with that being said, I think we've covered everything. If you're listening online, you're doing it the wrong way. Download that podcast app and subscribe. Yeah, that was Wickerphase. I'm Lee, and this was Kinda Neat.